All right, welcome to Young Turks election coverage. Ben Magwitz, Jake Huger, John Iadarola. Okay, so we got four states tonight: Vermont, Connecticut, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. We got a number of progressives in those races, but I've got dramatic news for you. Vermont has closed. In fact, they closed an hour and 11 minutes ago. Okay, Connecticut closed. John, results go.
We do have beginnings of results. So let's see. In the primary for Vermont's governor's race, you have four candidates. Christine Hultquist has been endorsed by the Justice Democrats. And with 10% reporting, Christine Hultquist has a nice little lead, actually.
Really?
43.8% of the vote. Brenda Siegel is in second with roughly half that.
Well, you look 10% at that.
In, yeah, we start off with a little bit of
a lead. Yeah. A little bit of a lead to begin with. Although there have been leads in the past. Okay. So.
And I believe, I might get a little bit of the history wrong, but I believe that if Christine is the nominee, is the candidate, it would be the first, I believe, major party gubernatorial transgender candidate.
Yes.
I believe.
Remember the Republicans had a couple, right? No, they didn't have any. That's right.
I'll give it the old Google.
Okay. They wouldn't let their own gubernatorial candidate into the bathrooms. No. So there are three Just Democrats up tonight. One of them is a guy named Randy Bryce, otherwise known as Iron Stash. And he is running in Paul Ryan's district. Unfortunately, not against Paul Ryan. One, because this is just the primary. And two, because Paul Ryan ran like a coward. That's only a +5 district. So if Randy wins the primary, I think, especially in a wave year, he stands a very, very good chance of winning that district. Paul Ryan, it's not just a +5 district. Paul Ryan also would have had huge name recognition. Now, nobody knows who's running as a Republican in that district. I would argue Randy Bryce has much better name recognition in that district. So that's picking up Paul Ryan's seat would be awesome. So Wisconsin's up for tonight. He's in Wisconsin's first district.
Well, there's one candidate on the Republican side that has a little bit of name recognition from there was like a brief. There was a couple days of news around Paul Nalin.
Yeah.
Paul Nalin.
He's a Nazi.
A self-described pro-white Christian American candidate.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To differentiate himself from the other Republican candidates who are not pro-white or Christian.
I misspoke. I called him out. He's more of a Klansman.
Okay, let's be fair. Okay.
Yeah.
That's true. He was in the news being a madman, unsurprisingly. And so there's three Just Democrats, Randy Bryce in Wisconsin's first, Christine Hultquist running for governor in Vermont, coming out of the gate with a nice lead. And then Minnesota's fifth district, there's Ilhan Omar. She has not been on the show, but she is endorsed by the Just Democrats. Minnesota's fifth district. So Minnesota and Wisconsin obviously close a little bit later, but actually in about 45 minutes. And then we'll track those races and some other progressive races for you guys as well. So last week was an enormous week of primaries, 13 races overall, and of course some prominent ones. Randy Bryce is very, very prominent. I would argue that before Ocasio-Cortez, he might have been the most prominent progressive primary candidate in the country, because he had that famous ad with the iron workers hat on, et cetera, when he took on Paul Ryan. So he's raised millions of dollars, no corporate PAC money. So a lot of people paid attention to that race. Everybody wanted Paul Ryan defeated. So he had his huge financial advantage, which doesn't happen often for progressives. Okay, yes, John.
Much of the wind was taken out of the sails of that race when Paul Ryan backed out, because that's
right.
That was why it was so interesting. Was the
That's right. But you know, you could argue that that Randy chased him out. And there's several different factors as to why Paul Ryan left. But one of them was, yeah, you don't want to get humiliated and lose you in your own district. And in a blue wave, if you're in R+5, yeah, there's a good chance. And if you do, then you know you lose earning potential, you lose leverage for future bigger runs. So I believe that Randy doing as well as he did had a significant role in Paul Ryan.
And losing that sort of the cachet of the race doesn't really matter. I mean, if you get elected to Congress, then you're in Congress just the same. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And nobody comes up and goes, yeah, but not quite enough cachet yeah, in
right,
your win.
Right. Totally,
yeah. So in that race, have you been following the primary really heated up in the past couple of months between him and Kathy Myers?
Yeah,
have you been following that at all?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a rare race in that context where you guys might have been following it more than I have. So, Ben, what's your thoughts on?
Well, I mean, he had a couple of marijuana possession arrests, right?
Oh, no.
Right, but I figured that.
Oh, no. That's when I gave up on him.
Right,
that's
actually. I didn't know he was that bad a guy. I didn't know he had.
Done.
Yeah, he had problems with his moral character.
But there were also some charges, and I don't know from when. They hadn't paid child support. Now, and again, that matters. Was it 18 years ago or was it two? But they're from her, you know, and so she and he fought back. So it's been a expensive and negative race. And the argument is, as it always is, and sometimes it's right, that has made whoever comes out of this, whether it's Myers or Bryce, that they'll be in worse position to win that seat because you'll have, you know, sometimes a competitive race helps. Say an incredibly negative race if it leaves Democrats who would have voted for a Democrat but are supporters of the losing candidate, if it leaves them ticked off and unmotivated to vote because of the negativity, then it's a
I think oftentimes it helps. I think it's overhyped that it hurts. And I want to ask more about her in a second, and I want to talk about smear campaigns against progressives in a second.
Because that's not what I was referring to. That's true. It has gotten a little bit dirty, but I just mean in terms of, so she has been, her grievance that's been sort of communicated through ads and interviews and things like that is that because obviously he sort of captured this national attention like months and months ago. It's been quite a while. I think it was before any of the primaries had really started to get all that serious. That it sort of made it, he was the prohibitive favorite. Sort of understandably. I mean, he came out so strong and everything. And she is saying, like, I am a strong progressive as well. Like, she supports Medicare for all. She supports $15 minimum wage. Supports banning assault weapons. Like, you go down all these things. I've been looking it over as well. Now, I support Randy Bryce. I think he's absolutely awesome, especially in terms of how he's financing his campaign and everything. But in this case, it's not the same as, how many times have we been through, we have this awesome progressive, usually as a Justice Democrat, maybe our revolution, and then Emily's List comes in with $1.3 million, and you have someone who was a Republican businessman 3 years ago. This doesn't seem exactly like that situation here.
So he
very important context.
So he paid off the $1,257 in back child support in August as part of the race, and then he later it looks like paid off another $1,776. So he had outstanding, he had a lien on his property because he hadn't paid child support, and then with interest he ended up paying about $4,200. He also had a DUI.
Okay, DUI is different than, you know, smoking marijuana. I don't care about
it. It is,
that.
And so is the child support. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying it reflects that he shouldn't get elected to Congress. I'm just saying that there's not a opponent in any race that we've ever had in this country that would not use that information in a race.
I understand that. But, okay, let's just, unless you have more results.
I do, actually.
Okay, yeah, then I want to come back to the smears. Yeah.
Some of the very early returns are coming in from Connecticut. So I'm from Connecticut. And they've got a competitive primary on the Democratic side for governor. And the context there is that Dan Malloy, I believe, is the second. So the current Democratic governor is, I think, the second most unpopular governor in the country. But Connecticut's a pretty Democratic state. All their congressmen and women are Democrats. But that doesn't mean that they don't occasionally have a Republican governor. That's something that's happened.
More than occasionally.
Exactly, yeah. So here's the thing. You have two candidates here, and I have a somewhat personal stake in this. So Ned Lamont, actually, who we've talked about recently.
Man. He's back? I didn't know that. I have to confess, that's my fault for not knowing that. Okay.
So Ned Lamont, who beat Joe Lieberman in the Democratic primary for Senate there. Joe bounced back by running not as a Democrat. Great example of Democratic unity there. So Ned Lamont is back. Now, you also have Joe Ghanem. Now, most people across the country probably are not familiar with Joe Ghanem, but Joe Ghanem has basically been the mayor of my hometown of Bridgeport, Connecticut for the last 300 years. So Joe Ghanem is an interesting guy. It's one of the great political comeback stories because he was the mayor of Bridgeport for about 10 years. He's the mayor again. And in the middle, he disappeared from political life. But the reason he disappeared from political life is because he was convicted of 16 counts of federal corruption charges and he spent 7 years in prison. And then my hometown of Bridgeport, once he gets out of prison, elects him mayor
again. Amazing.
He took over $500,000 and just built lavish homes and things like that. And now he's running against Ned Lamont. Now, as you can see, with 4% reporting, he's got 14% of the vote. So apparently people outside of Bridgeport, Connecticut are not buying it. But how did that guy ever win any race again?
You know, it's funny. There's a little bit of racism in this because, you know, when Marion Barry goes to prison and comes back and runs and first wins, I think, in the 9th ward in D.C. and then wins, becomes mayor again, there is, D.C. voters, black people, right? Mm-hmm. Right? And it turns out, he's their guy, your boy, Joe Gamony, what's his name?
Ganim. Joe Ganim.
Joe Ganim is their guy, and he's like, he's our guy. And Marion Barry's like, he's our guy. Yeah, I got it.
You know how those Ganims are. They stick together. I have no idea. Is he Italian? I'm
idea. I'm pretty sure he's Italian.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, a lot of people in Bridgeport are. But Bridgeport's a very diverse city. I think he's Italian.
Said the guy named John Idarola.
There is an Italian population, that's true.
He's definitely Italian. Come on.
By the way, what?
Oh, he did graduate from the University of Connecticut there, so obviously a smart guy, but corrupt.
He was I'd lay dollars to, I'm not going to say it, that he was a Ganino. Like at some point that family was a Ganini or a Ganino, and somebody changed it.
Oh, and they changed it.
They dropped it, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, I thought you were going to bet on whether John voted for him because he was just Italian from Bridgeport.
Right, totally, I'm sure he did.
That was a little bit before me.
It is amazing that people will vote for stuff like that again. But that's actually a good lead-in to the conversation I wanted to have. But
super
go ahead.
Fast before that. So I don't want to go too in-depth into this, but God, Bridgeport is this weird place. So during that interim period where he was in prison, the mayor was a guy named Bill Finch. I went to high school with his son. I'm not going to tell you the things I know, but apparently runs the family because at one point, Bill Finch, the mayor, I believe while he was mayor, and his son, they went into a bar and they got in, like they both fought another group of people.
That's actually kind of cool.
I guess a little bit. But so, Bridgeport, like we need serious government. It used to be this booming town, like, and it's been rough for a long time there.
That's kind of badass. Be like, son, you want to go kick some ass, and then go to a bar and get into a fight.
This is the problem. this is the problem.
That's why
you know what? Stealing $500,000, kind of badass.
Yeah. It's my Mediterranean roots. They're like, not so bad. Okay, I kind of like the guy.
On CNN or MSNBC, you won't find somebody speculating wildly about a candidate's ethnicity, suggesting that years ago they dropped a vowel from their name. And you know why? Because frequently you'd be wrong. It appears he was just born to George Ganim. By the way, I think I said Ganino, and it would be Ganimo, which doesn't actually.
That's a movie.
It doesn't work as well.
That's right. A kid's movie.
He was born to George and Josephine Ganim. That's not what I said. It's not true.
So clearly, they changed a generation before.
That's right.
But that's totally possible. In fact, Stephen Miller's uncle was talking about how they changed their family name. I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I do have a result, by the way.
Result first.
Oh, sorry.
No. Results always first.
We do have a call, actually. So sometimes we have to cover these candidates that I literally never heard of, but. It has been called the Democratic primary for Vermont's U.S. Senate seat. Bernie Sanders.
Mm. That guy has no chance. He has no chance of winning.
It's really throwing
the
seat away.
How did he win? That guy's not even a Democrat. I can't believe they voted for an independent in Vermont. Yeah. Stick to the party. Jesus Christ, man.
We had a chance there. Now,
yeah. That's weird. He doesn't take any corporate PAC money either, by the way. Somehow he pulled that off. Bernie Sanders, the big winner, and they said it wasn't possible. There it is right there, blue check, 94.3%. I'm not saying anything.
Is coming in, though. Politico is reporting that because he lost 5.7% of the vote, he is in disarray.
Yeah, that's right.
Falling apart.
But what we're saying instead is this. Bernie Sanders. Sanders the winner, just like we told you guys. Just like we told you guys.
I mean,
maybe we were off by a couple of years, right? In either direction.
But wait, Bernie, that implies he's going to lose in a couple
of
years.
I know, that doesn't make any sense.
I don't like that. I was gonna say, hey, look, I lost in 2016 and 2020, but I crushed
that person.
Fali, who's the guy who ran the Turkish coup from the Poconos?
Fethullah Gulen.
But I beat Fethullah Gulen in 2018.
that Muslim fundamentalist only got 5.7% of the vote. Okay, no more coups for him. Not the person. We're kidding.
His name, just his long name, began with
not
F.
Not a cleric.
Yeah. And it's a joke about a Turk, so I have the immunity idol. And I also pass it on to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Bernie Sanders, the big winner tonight. We'll see you guys later.
Peter Welch, do we have a Peter Welch result? Congressional seat there in the great state of Vermont?
We do have 19% of the vote. Peter Welch is at 83.5%.
Right, so Peter Welch is going to win too. He's endorsed by Bernie.
Yeah.
So can you state that in its entirety again?
Yes.
The area, the percentage reporting, et cetera?
Yeah, so this is the at-large district, because I think there's between 40 and 50 people.
That's right.
In Vermont, somewhere between 40 to 50. It depends on if a tourist family has come in to eat the delicious like waffles and brunch and things like that.
And ice cream.
But Peter Welch, the current incumbent, is at 83.5% of the vote. That's with about a fifth of the vote in.
Okay. And Bernie endorsed the incumbent?
Yeah, they're front. I think they're
how dare
part of the establishment. That's right.
Yeah. I knew he was pro-establishment. No, there are actually good incumbents, believe it or not. Not that many, but there are some.
And hopefully,
I don't know if it was a formal endorsement. I saw a tweet from Bernie today, like, you know, thanks to all Vermonters for participating in this great election day. Let's send Peter Welch back to Congress. And
No. And look, I think it was Ben's point earlier, or no, it was John's that. There are some races with two good progressives, and awesome, yep. Great. So in Massachusetts, Ayanna Pressley is a really great up-and-coming progressive. She's just Democrat, super psyched about her. She's running against an incumbent, Capuano, who is really progressive. They're both really progressive.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing.
Welch, by the way, supported Bernie during his presidential run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was the one super candidate who backed him.
There were a couple of others.
One super delegate.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed.
He's a pretty super candidate too. I mean,
yeah, he's apparently probably gonna win it. Crushing.
Did Merkley support him?
Yeah.
Didn't one of those Northwestern senators support Bernie?
I think Merkley did. Yeah.
It was Merkley.
I'm now trying to picture the Politico article tomorrow. Bernie Sanders backed Peter Welch. Peter Welch only got 83.5% of the vote. What happened to the other 16.5% flailing?
Did you see the? I know that you have topics that you want to get to. Just briefly, did you see the CBS News editorial that came out? I believe yesterday, it might have been early this morning. It's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the new Sarah Palin.
Oh, God damn it.
What was that in? And what?
This is CBS News, I think.
Oh. No, look, that is a topic I want to discuss. Because the propaganda, I'm telling you, by the mainstream media is oppressive.
I mean, it's an op-ed. They brought someone in, but.
No, so here's what they aid and abet the right-wing smears. So what does the right-wing do, okay? They take things that are tiny little things and they blow them up into these giant scandals, so-called scandals or controversies or faux pas, etc. So one of them was, in an answer, the one that they consider like the most significant, she paused in answering the question about Palestine, right? And okay, fine, she paused a little bit. Woo, wow. Okay, have you ever seen the Herman Cain answer on Libya?
Libya,
right? Okay, so have you ever seen Donald Trump answer anything, period, right? Or George W. Bush, sovereignty. Anyway, she then went on to say that Palestine was occupied because it's occupied.
I don't understand.
How is that a controversy? So they make things into controversies that aren't controversies.
They're trying to imply that she believes that there is an internationally recognized, universally state of Palestine that is being occupied. I don't believe there's any reason to believe that that's what she's saying.
You guys are both, I get why you'd be outraged by this.
Because if you're not implying that, then what philosophically that she said was actually incorrect?
Man, this is politics. It's disingenuous, but the fact of the matter is it makes it seem like she's anti-Israel. That's the whole point. The whole point is that she's not, progressives aren't to be trusted, and she's not to be trusted because that's an anti-Israel thing to say, because even the most prominent progressive in the country, Bernie Sanders, probably wouldn't use that language.
No, not remotely true. Bernie Sanders, of course, says that the Palestinians are occupied. Oh, because they're occupied. It's not. That's what I'm saying. It's a fake controversy. No, but I will grant you this, Ben.
Bernie Sanders uses the phrase Israel's occupation of Palestine.
I would be shocked if he didn't.
I would be surprised if he did, but I don't know. I don't know.
Well, because it's occupied. It's an occupation.
I'm saying there are ways to make that point that most politicians.
This is exactly what drives me crazy. So for those of you unfamiliar with this,
I have a quote.
Insane debate. All right, here, John, and then I'll tell you the context of the debate.
This comes from an April Intercept article where Sanders is quoted as saying, "I understand that the Netanyahu government is trying to make this all about Hamas in order to delegitimize any opposition to the blockade and the occupation."
Of course,
okay,
he does.
All right, but I got it.
But you're not right. Look, let me explain. Let me explain. Yeah. So I just read a really long and interesting article from back when they were having the Democratic Party platform debate in 2016. And the Democrats, the Bernie Sanders wing, and that's why I knew that he used the word, insisted that they put occupation into the platform, saying that, hey, we should be against the occupation of the Palestinians and work towards a two-state solution. That was previously totally non-controversial. But the Hillary Clinton wing absolutely insisted that the word occupation not be used. Now, that's not Republicans, that's Democrats. And that's mental. It's mental. But yes, in that case, I'm sorry, but it's the donors.
But
and the donors say, don't use it. And what do? They sent in, and this was interesting. And you should read that story in Alternate. I wish I had the name of it. I'll try to find it for you later in the program as we do this live, right? They used African-Americans that were in the Democratic Party to defeat the proposal. People like Bakari Sellers. And it turns out, and I had no idea, AIPAC has been fostering African-American Democrats and supporting them throughout the country for moments like this, and it was Cornel West who proposed it for Bernie Sanders. And all they asked for was to recognize the dignity of the Palestinians living under occupation. It was not a big ask. There was nothing like in the old days, the word Zionism is a little controversial. Apartheid is controversial. BDS is controversial. It was none of that. It was just what we used to always say, occupied. Now they've made that into some sort of fake debate.
You know, it was referred to through all of our lifetime as the occupied territories, right? So
yeah, exactly.
I'm not arguing with any of that. I am saying that, as you will acknowledge, I think that when you were talking about it, if you were going to be on the national stage, and I'm sure she's keenly aware of this, especially after that interview, you just have to be careful. And the literal phrasing, Israel's occupation of Palestine, is a phraseology which I don't think even, and he didn't use it there, I'm not saying we wouldn't be able to find it, but what Bernie said there is not the same as saying Israel's occupation.
She should say it. She should say it 1,000 times, because it's a million.
You don't see the difference in that? I mean, saying the phrase Israel's occupation of Palestine is going to alert a degree of response from people defending Israel. What is Bernie's quote?
Bernie's quote was about Hamas in order to delegitimize any opposition to the blockade and the occupation.
Because it's what you've struggled with in my mind for 16 years is the difference between saying something and rounding the edge. Like, you want to drop off the cliff? Sure, you drop off the cliff. And people see people drop off the cliff and they're like, fuck, that guy's going off the cliff. Excuse me, that guy's falling off the cliff. As opposed to a guy's a rounded, careful way to say the same thing. It's largely what politics is.
I don't see it. Saying Israel's occupation. I don't see it at all.
Okay, then listen and try, at least. You may disagree, but saying the phrase, the Israeli occupation of Palestine, one, makes Palestine a country, right? Which is going to irritate people. But
All right.
And that they are a foreign force in a country
the way the Nazis occupied
Poland. I at least now see what you're saying.
That's really the extent of what I'm saying, as opposed to saying the occupied territories or what Bernie said. What was the end of Bernie's quote?
It just referred to the occupation.
The occupation.
But that's just one quote. But remember, so Bernie Sanders pushed for the Democratic platform to recognize that there was an occupation.
Right, and I would have pushed for that Democratic platform also.
Yeah, I know you would.
So if she had said the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories?
If she'd said, I think it's important to the Israel leave the occupied territories, I'm saying it is a clumsy entry into that.
So can I just say?
But
can
I'm not, look, man, you guys.
No, you're on our side. I get it.
No, but you're
just
also
explaining like why people are upset about it. I guess in today's
insanity. I'm not explaining why people are upset about it. I don't care. I think the people who are upset about it are wrong, and I think the people who are upset about it are disingenuous. I am saying that phraseology on subjects like that, for a skilled politician going forward, makes a big difference.
Yeah, I don't want a skilled politician. I don't want some robot who's like, oh, no, I don't want
to. As always, I don't understand. I want a skilled politician, and I don't think one precludes the other. But Americans hate that polished nonsense, man.
If, you know what it is? It's a goddamn occupation. Call it what it is, okay? It is. Who's occupying them? Norway? Israel's occupying them.
Yeah, that's true.
The Israeli occupation of Palestine. That's exactly what it is. Why would I change my words to appeal to some right-wing zealot?
I don't think it's appealing to a right-wing zealot also. I think it is at times showing a careful regard for Jews who will be on your side.
No.
I have no problem arguing with you because I know you're wrong when you just suggest that I don't want polish. Of course you don't want polish. You also don't want stumbling, and I don't want her to have stories like this.
No, but
98% of what she says, 100% of what she says is so vital and necessary.
But Ben, that goes to the heart of the story, which is much more important than this particular really weird debate about words around occupation. And by the way, just real quick to end that, my perspective on that at least is, you know, you could prevent the occupation by not occupying them. So Israel could solve that whole problem of phraseology if they stopped occupying them, which they are, 1,000,000%.
Right, but occupying what? That would be
occupying Palestine.
Right, but
Palestine. In case you weren't clear enough.
Cenk, not
and I'm, if that offends you, stop occupying them.
Not okay. If they stopped occupying them, if they stopped the occupation. I'm kidding.
Okay, whatever.
I'm trying to understand what you're saying. I'm not necessarily getting it.
I'm not saying I'm explaining it well.
I'm not saying you're the devil. I will leave it to people to tweet it to me, and then I'll read the tweets.
Okay, no.
I have a call, by the way.
So let's pause here for the call, and then I want to explain the real heart of the issue.
So this is a positive call. I mean, it didn't look like it was going to go any other way than this. But with 15% of the vote in the Connecticut's governor's Democratic primary, it has been called Ned Lamont will be the candidate.
You know, he lost to Dan Malloy. He ran for governor in 2010.
Oh, did he really?
In the Democratic primary and lost to Dan Malloy.
Mm.
And okay. Now,
well,
hopefully,
he's stuck around.
Because this is obviously a seat, as you mentioned, that Republicans feel like they can take because Malloy is so unpopular that hopefully there'll be a degree of, I think we owe this to Ned Lamont.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, it'd be great to have Ned Lamont finally win. So that would be fantastic for old time's sake, at least. Plus, for the sake of the voters of Connecticut and the people of Connecticut. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled yelling. look, the heart of the issue is that if you nitpick anyone, you could pretend that it was a slip up to say occupied versus occupation or whichever one you were supposed to say, I've already forgotten. Okay, and then you could say,
you know which one.
And I literally like the different so-called scandals that they have invented for her. We covered one on the show where Fox News said they went to a rally that she attended with Cori Bush, and it was scary because they were saying that they were gonna, it was seductive because they were saying they were actually gonna give healthcare for your family. Wait, that's a scandal? That's not a scandal, that's her position. And in fact, you're admitting that you liked her position and hence it was seductive, right? And I can't keep track of the fake nonsense, ridiculous non-scandals. But what does it do? It creates an impression of like, oh, she's troubled, I don't know. And then some ass, writes a so-called editorial on CBS, which CBS is super happy to write. Right. If I talk,
he's a conservative columnist for the Boston Herald, so a Murdoch paper. He's a conservative columnist.
Right. Yes. Now, CBS, if I write an article about how unbelievably stupid Louis Gohmert is, are you going to publish it? Because Louis Gohmert's one of the dumbest guys in the country. Are you going to publish it? No, you're not. No, you're not, because you're going to say, oh, whoa, that's a Republican congressman. This progressive, that's a radical, that is uncouth and uncivilized. But you allow a conservative to write an article, and that furthers all this. Now, the last thing that it connects all this is, look at the right-wing privilege. Ben Shapiro says, I'd like to debate Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'm going to give her $10,000. Now, on Fox News, there's three other conservatives, some soap opera star or something, an old rock band person, whatever, right? They're all like, I'm going to debate her. Everybody's covering, oh, she won't debate them, she won't debate them. Okay, I'll debate Ted Cruz, I said, for $10,000. Nobody covers it. Why? It's not because of me or Ben Shapiro or whoever the hell was on Fox
News. Candace Owens also.
Right, Candace Owens, right? Because the idea is, well, the right wing. So somehow she owes them. And then they do the smear job on her day after day after day. And then we have debates about it. And now they have won because it isn't in the answer, it's in the question. So if we're having a debate as to whether she is not a savvy politician, I'll just phrase it that way. Well, okay, then they've already won in the framing. And it's horse crap.
Okay, as always, you have a very good point, and lost in the details hinders the point. The question that she was asked was, what is your position on Israel? During a question about foreign policy. That seems like a fair question.
Yeah, no, that's not a gotcha question. Perfectly fair question.
So then when she got to the point where she was doing better than 59% of every first-term congressman, maybe 69% of all congresspeople, right? So I got no beef with that. I don't think that interview was horrible. But when she said, in a world like Peter Strzok, where you should be able to send, you can vote in an election, you can send text messages to your friends, and whether the friends you're sleeping with or friends you're not sleeping with. But even supporters would be like, yeah, but now they've been subpoenaed, and now you've stepped in it. Even though in a just world, we should be like, hey, they're text messages. Who gives a crap, right? Mm-hmm. So she said, at the beginning of an answer, I also think she talked about the geopolitics of it and Israel's right to exist, and then started talking about the Palestinians and her concern for Palestinians. And then no issue, and then the issue, if there is one, and it shouldn't be, I'm agreeing with it, but yes. I also think that what people are starting to see is that at least in the occupation of Palestine is just an increasing crisis of humanitarian conditions. And so then the interviewer, the former George Bush aide, of course, asked her to clarify. She paused and answered, I think what is meant is the settlements are increasing in some of these areas in places where Palestinians are experiencing difficulty in access to their housing and homes. And so I would argue that even she knew that no one could possibly argue with the second answer. In fact, it's arguably too benign, right?
In fact, that argument is made by the left wing that now says that answer was not sufficiently
right,
against the occupation.
Right. It is a difficult issue. And I don't mean it's overly complicated. It's not that complicated. Get out of the settlements. Give that to, that's Palestine. Build a wall if you want, but we're done, right? Mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. But given the politics of it, as nature of this conversation, I am merely arguing if I were a advisor to her, I'm like, hey, this is tricky. The specific language on these things matter if you want to avoid having to dig out of a hole that you shouldn't have to dig out of. But the whole point is we're trying to win. That's it.
I got you. And look, your points are not unfair, but the problem is that I don't want to acknowledge that this is an actual issue. I hate that that everyone pretends that like are you, our unpolished speech. Look at who the president is. Look at who the president is. Look, and I'll give you another example that is more equivalent, right? Because you had a Republican congressman down in Florida, and I don't want to say the name because I'm not positive. It was from a couple of years back. And they asked him about the minimum wage and should the minimum wage be higher. And he's like, no, why don't they work for a living? Well, if they're getting paid a minimum wage, by definition, they are working for a living. That's an incredibly dumb thing to say. But was there giant scandals and et cetera, and people were offering debates, and how dare he, and he's so stupid, and what a dumb guy. No, because he was an older white male Republican.
Businessman, maybe he thought the topic
was universal basic income, and he was just ahead of the curve.
And by the way, the mainstream media doesn't call out things that are also that are way more over the top. Louie Gohmert, and Ben and I covered it on the air together, did a speech about how Obama was reconstituting the Ottoman Empire, and that was gonna and he was gonna that was somehow going to take over. Now that is a bona fide lunatic, should be in an insane asylum in a white jacket, okay? Obama was reconstituting the Ottoman Empire, and we're having a conversation whether Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said occupation or occupied. The occupied territories are Palestine. That's the conversation we're having. And then there's editorials on CBS about how she might be like Sarah Palin, who's never read a newspaper in her life.
Who couldn't name a newspaper.
Come on. Well, we're all manufactured.
No, well, as is an argument of that the tax cuts for the richest people and then a secret tax cuts for the banks, that's all, hey man, this is how businessmen do business. And many of these businessmen went to college, and certainly their parents did, went to college for free. Like, and the notion that college should be free now is somehow radical. The notion that healthcare should be free when almost every other civilized country in the Western world offers it for free. But somehow that is radical, and what Donald Trump is proposing, and that what all these businessmen who are benefiting off and corporates who are benefiting off the tax cuts, that the kind of America they proposing, hey man, that's just slightly right of center mainstream American politics.
Yeah. Your example was great about Louie Gohmert. I think you might be punching even too low. I mean, there's higher profile examples. Like, I've got two for Trump. I mean, we can come up with hundreds, but substantively, if you Google the worst debate answer in history, I did a video about his response to a question from Hugh Hewitt about the nuclear triad. It doesn't mean anything. It's like a parody of a clueless response. But more immediately, there is good reason to believe, based on things that went around in the media today and Donald Trump's own social media activity, there is good reason to believe that Donald Trump eats paper. And we're talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. He eats notes.
He didn't know what Nepal and Bhutan were. He thought
nipple and button.
Button.
He doesn't know what time zones are or how they work.
So
is that true? I didn't know.
Yes, that was also reported. He keeps calling up leaders in the middle of the night. They get frustrated with him, and Donald Trump doesn't understand why it's an issue. They keep having to explain what a time zone is.
You know, in the story that we did about that set of facts that came out, right, about his lack of knowledge about foreign policy, we mentioned that he thinks it's nipple and button. But to be fair, he was joking when he said button. Does he know how to pronounce it? That's okay. I don't think he
know
does.
He didn't right?
With the debate. But no, that's what I'm getting to.
Doesn't know
that's
what
I'm getting to. And we didn't. I forgot to explain in that story what Ben just said, which is that the much more relevant thing is he didn't know that they were countries. He said, "What is this thing between India and Pakistan?" What do you mean? What is this thing? What does that mean?
Right.
Like, what do you think it is? It's separate countries. What else would it be? What else could it be? Right?
Yeah, you're looking at a map. Right. It's very clear that they are different countries.
Like, what a weird thing. And I mean, and we give him 1,000, and you think the press is tough on him. And I get why you think that, because they, you know, they point out all, they just quote him. I mean, all you have to do is quote him and just walk away. I get it. But they're not tough enough. He thought Ireland was part of the United Kingdom. If Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had said Ireland was part of the United Kingdom, they would have eviscerated her, right? Because the media respects the right wing, and they don't respect the left wing. They just don't.
And you're totally right that when she gives that interview, that their immediate response is, aha, thank God, something that now we can call her, especially as a 28-year-old woman of color, even more so, not just a progressive, but a 28-year-old woman of color. Like, she, look at this silly girl. Silly girl on the national stage that, you know, the stage that should be dominated by white businessmen, people who know how things work.
And so when they perpetuate that right-wing smear machine, they've got to at least be cognizant that they're doing it, and they're not at all cognizant. They're not doing it. I don't think they're doing it on purpose.
I just see her as having this. It is an enormous amount of pressure because she has become the bright shining light. She is the star. So the obligation suddenly that this 28-year-old woman, relative newcomer to politics has is to, she's got a whole bunch of people that she's supposed to, that she needs to, that I hope she can pull up now. And I think she can, because I think the response is now, she's taken largely the tactic that you're suggesting, right? I mean, her responses to Ben Shapiro on Twitter, those are excellent. You know, there's no tepidness, there's no, you know, well, I'm very busy during the campaign, I don't know if I'll have the time to debate you.
But what I'm sick about is, I've seen this movie before. They attack the strongest person on your side, and they do it over and over and over and over again until it becomes conventional wisdom. So eventually, it's going to be groupthink in Washington that she's not bright, which is so wrong. By the way, if she wasn't so bright, how the hell did she beat the fourth most powerful Democrat in the House? And beloved by the mainstream media, beloved by Washington, the great Joe Crowley. Well, I guess he's a total moron then. I guess he's the dumbest guy in America, right? No, but you wouldn't say that about Joe Crowley.
Yeah. Yeah, and just like follow her social media. Like, she does, like, you can go through all these interviews. And by the way, in the wake of her winning that primary, she did 762 interviews. So there's going to be something where she slips up simply because she's not allowed to sleep. But look at her social media. She knows how to communicate about all these issues, arguably maybe even better than Bernie, in terms of expressing the values behind these policy positions, wrapping them in this message of economic dignity and freedom that I think people understand implicitly. Like, to attack her on her communication, I think, is the most disingenuous thing, because I think that is one of her greatest strengths. I think it's one of the reasons that she won that primary. She went around for a year and a half talking to people in that district, and they found her so appealing in direct contrast with this longstanding congressman that they couldn't help but support her.
Yeah, super last thing is that it's disproportionate, because no one is doing it to the right wing. Now, you could say, hey, Cenk, you guys point out Gohmert stuff and other congressmen, and you point out Trump all the time, but there's no one that backs us. It's not a coordinated attack. It's not then the New Republic picks it up, and then Alternet picks it up, and then MSNBC picks it up, and then CNN repeats it because it was on MSNBC, and then everybody knows that that guy's an idiot. No, that just doesn't happen on the left. So it creates a totally uneven playing field, and that's what's so maddening.
So you should call CBS. You should have our, I'm not saying it'll work, but
I billion percent guarantee that they will totally ignore it.
All right, well, let's.
Yeah. Then CBS, like, largest progressive network, who cares?
So you could do a piece about not just Louis Gohmert. You could include, with limited research that the staff here can help you with. I got other things to do. 27 moronic things said by Republican male members of Congress. You might have to include Marsha Blackburn. Who's super dumb. But just yes. She's in a group of dumb people.
And Virginia Fox.
Right. So, Michelle. And that would be a powerful piece that you should write anyway and present. And then when CBS says they won't run it, as they ran this guy from the Boston Herald, a Rupert Murdoch lackey, they run that piece and put it under the CBS banner. And then, yeah, it's marked opinion, right? But who can tell, right? Then you've got the rejection from it. I would do it.
Super fast, just a few for when you write that. We all remember when, was it Inhofe, walked onto the floor of the Senate and then disproved decades of thousands of papers showing evidence for climate change by holding up a snowball and saying, what now?
Dude, it was like late March, okay?
Yeah, all right. And he had a snowball.
Yeah.
There was that. There was Michelle Bachmann's 3% of 3% emissions argument that made no sense to anyone, including Michelle Bachmann.
How about her argument that teachers are teaching kids to be gay?
There you go. Mm-hmm. And I believe it might have been Louis Gohmert that said his argument against homosexuality was, what if we ran an experiment where we put homosexuals on an island and come back in 200 years? How'd that go for you?
Right.
Oh, well, I didn't know you were that rocket scientist.
I'm going to look up. That might not have been Louis Gohmert.
It was.
But it was?
Yeah, it was Louis Gohmert.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, guys, we got to take a break. John, any more calls before we take the break?
Yes. I don't think that we actually announced it. It seemed pretty definite. But in Connecticut's Democratic primary for the governor's seat, Ned Lamont has been called as the winner. Joe Ganim, my former mayor, is still at around 15%. And by the way, what I love is in Bridgeport counties, that's Joe Ganim's county, he is currently up by maybe 3% of the vote in that county.
But he's like, ahead?
He's ahead. It's the only one he's ahead in, and just barely.
They
Ned Lamont's doing very well.
They love their people. I am anxious to see. This is a good opportunity for Joe Lieberman to retake the stage and run as an independent. be the next governor of Connecticut.
Don't give him ideas.
All
don't
look
give
forward
him
to
ideas.
That.
Yeah. Momentum.
Okay. You know what? Before we go, though, let's check in on the Vermont governor race. I want to see.
I've been watching it the whole time. We're up to 31% now, and Christine Hultquist has retained virtually the exact same lead the entire
time. She's going to be the nominee.
Yeah, that race is over, yeah.
Wow, fantastic.
And she will be going up against Phil Scott, the current incumbent.
You know, maybe they're not attacking her as much because she used to be a white male businessman. So they're like, whoa, wait, I don't know, I'm confused. I know we're not allowed to do that. Anyway, she's a great progressive. I had her on Rebel Headquarters and a wonderful story and how she decided to come out when her one of her kids was shooting a movie about her. It's an amazing story. So I love the fact that she's winning. It's wonderful. We got to take a quick break. It's in about 3 minutes. The polls close in Wisconsin and Minnesota as well, and we will have results for you from those states, and obviously finish up the races in Vermont and Connecticut as well. Come right back.